Support for WPR comes from Wills on behalf of Wisconsin Public Libraries, offering access to ebooks, audiobooks, digital magazines, and more. Available with a Wisconsin Library Card at wisconsinsdigitallibrary.org.
Support for WPR comes from Rutabaga Paddle Sports, offering kayaks, canoes, and outdoor equipment for anyone wanting to experience the natural beauty of Wisconsin water. 2620 Rimrock Road in Madison or rutabagashop.com.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. Coming up, we get the details of a new collective bargaining agreement reached this week with U.S. national men's and women's soccer teams that equalizes their pay for the first time. Now, it's a rainy one for a lot of Wisconsin today. Not ideal for eating or doing much of anything outside, but sunnier days are ahead, and with that comes the joy of eating together outside. Memorial Day weekend is our gateway to summer cookouts, picnics, and other fun gatherings, so we thought we'd get a jump on the holiday weekend in this week's edition of Food Friday. And it's not just the stuff on the grill. Our guest has great advice for foods you can bring along to your summer gathering, whatever it is. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you planning, say, a Memorial Day weekend get-together outdoors? What's on the menu so far? Do you need advice for the menu? Are you attending a barbecue for the holiday weekend? Do you look forward to picnics? What are some of your favorite things to serve at a summertime get-together? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Allie Rosen is the author of Bring It, Tried and True Recipes for Potlucks and Casual Entertaining. She hosts a food show in New York City called Potluck, and her latest cookbook is called Modern Freezer Meals, simple recipes to cook now and freeze for later. We'll hear a few of those recipes from that book. Allie, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me again.
You're a big potluck fan, I think indoors or out. A cookout's basically an outdoor potluck, I guess. What is it that you love about bringing dishes to share?
Well, I think that it's important, especially when we think about what we've all been through over the last few years, that the point of having meals together is to enjoy ourselves, come together. And if one person is stressed out making the whole meal, it has a very different vibe. So I just think that potlucks give everybody an opportunity to add something to the evening, to tell a story about what they're making. And if you're not a person who cooks, then bring a bottle of wine or buy a dessert. I mean, you know, it's inclusive. It's not trying to like one-up people. I mean, I don't know, maybe, you know, I've been to some potlucks that are a little bit one-uppy, but for the most part, it's just trying to bring everybody together, which is what food is all about in the first place.
Now, Allie, if I say, hey, yeah, come on over, we're having a food thing. Oh, but it's outside. We're doing it on the back porch or outside one way or the other. How does that change your game plan as you start to think about things you might make?
Yeah, well, I mean, I am a big proponent, both indoor and outdoor, of bringing room temperature food. You know, I feel like there is nothing worse than getting excited about a dish that's hot and having it sit and sort of get gloopy or get a little bit sad, or having something that needs to be really cold and then it starts to melt. So I think that the first thing is like, let go of your preconceived notions about food needing to be hot, you know, like find things that do well at room temperature. And then the other thing about outdoor items is you want them to be hearty, you know? So if you're tasked with bringing a salad, you know, don't bring something with arugula that'll wilt in 5 seconds, you know, use something heartier, a romaine or a kale. You know, you want it to be able to stand up to the heat. You know, you hope that you have heat on Memorial Day. You never know, but that's always the goal.
And I steer clear of like soup, anything that's going to require a bowl for my outside thing. And I'm trying to balance it on my lap on a deck chair or something. That's a no-no, right?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, anything that really requires like extra utensils or, you know, you need to cut, you know, things that either are single serving or that, you know, you can just sort of spoon with a fork and can't really fall over. I mean, and especially when it comes to desserts, like bring cookies, bring brownies, like do not, after everybody's been eating, try to bring like, you know, something that needs like a trifle or a, you know, tiramisu. Like that's just not what anybody needs in that moment. So, you know, it's just try to think about like, what do you want to eat when you're standing with a plastic plate and a plastic fork? Like it is not going to be something that's hard to pick up. That's why burgers and hot dogs are kind of the go-to for cookouts, right? You can pick them up with your hands.
Now, logistically speaking, the nightmare you want to avoid is, hey, I brought potato salad, and I see you brought potato salad, and the host made potato salad. How do we coordinate and make sure we're not all bringing the same stuff?
Oh, that is like, you know, it's like wearing the same dress, you know, everybody's showing up on the same thing. Yeah, I mean, I think if you're the host, it's kind of on you to not be vague or circumspect. You know, I think oftentimes we want to say like, oh, bring whatever, it's totally fine. But you're setting yourself and your guests up for embarrassment and potentially not having everything that you need, right? So you can say to someone, oh, I'd love it if you'd bring the dessert. I'd love it if you'd bring some hors d'oeuvres. You know, I think it's on the host typically to provide kind of the main course. You know, you want to be the one grilling the burgers or grilling the hot dogs. But, you know, give people something to bring and be specific about it. You know, most people want the option to be specific. Now, if somebody says to you, oh my God, you know, I was thinking that I would bring potato salad instead, then great. Then you know that. But start by assigning people and then take it from there.
We're talking to Allie Rosen, author of Bring It, Tried and True Recipes for Potlucks and Casual Entertaining. It's Food Friday. We're talking about food for our outdoor gatherings of all shapes and sizes, cookouts, picnics, graduation parties outside, you name it, things where you bring food and the host has food, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you like to host these kind of things? How do you sort out a menu? How do you delegate parts of that menu? Do you hate hosting these kind of things? Maybe our guest can help you like it a little bit more. And do you have that go-to, the one that you either you love bringing to a thing or that you did once, and now everybody says, hey, you got to bring that thing? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. All right, Allie, we've got a few recipes you shared with us. People can find them at WPR.org/Food Friday. Here's one that, like you said, works at different temperatures. This sounds really good. Pork and chive orzo. Can you tell us about this one?
I love this dish because it's one of those things that you make where people are like, wow, this is so interesting. And you're like, yes, it took me 5 minutes. It's great. It's pork, a lot of chives. You know, orzo is a great it's a pasta, but it kind of reminds you of rice. You know, it's great for outdoor parties. And this, it's a lot of soy sauce, so it has a ton of flavor. So it gives meat lovers and carb lovers something to really like dig into, but it also, you know, can stand up to being in the heat or sitting on a plate. It's easy to spoon out. So, I mean, that's the kind of dish where maybe it's not your standard potato salad or it's something a little bit different, yeah, but it's also like really easy to find the ingredients and really easy to make.
And this one, I should say, it's from your Modern Freezer Meals book. So this is one we can make and it freezes real good for like if we have that emergency potluck scenario.
Yes. I mean, I have to say, like, as somebody who entertains a lot, you know, I wrote a book about potlucks and then I wrote a book about freezer food, but they are very intertwined because a lot of hosting is getting stuff done as far ahead as you can. So, I mean, people who are cooking for Memorial Day weekend, like make stuff this weekend and throw it in your freezer and then it'll be ready to go for next weekend. I mean, I think that we take a lot of stress on when we try to plan a party and do everything in the day before and the day of. So that's been a big change for me. You know, I have 3 kids, so I don't often have an entire morning to prep for a party. You know, it's little bits and bobs here and there. So yeah, I like to get the freezer involved.
And this pork and chive orzo, I think you said it was inspired by a recipe that started with rice. Is something like orzo, a pasta, is that going to freeze better? I can't remember ever freezing rice dishes. Is rice bad for freezing?
No, I mean, so this is, you know, one of the things that I found so fascinating when writing this book was if you kind of push the limits of like, what can I freeze? It's really just about freezing it in the right state. So like, if you know you're going to freeze something, especially with pastas, you just want to undercook it a little bit because when you heat it back up, you know, it is going to cook again. The other thing is you want to freeze it in single servings. So if you're freezing, you know, a giant bowl of pasta, obviously by the time your microwave like gets to the interior of that, it's going to be soggy and sad, right? But if you freeze it in individual portions or you allow it to defrost, you'll have a different setup. So yeah, I think people avoid freezing pasta and it's actually, pasta freezes great. Like it's meant to hold up to heat, you know, you just don't want to overdo the heat on the front end.
Right, because you always make too much lasagna, so you can freeze some of it. That makes sense to me.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, like, why do we freeze lasagna, but we don't freeze other pastas? You know, it's like, we get these ideas in our mind of like, what things can and cannot be done in the kitchen. And a lot of the times it just takes like doing something a different way once to totally unlock a new way to think about the food that you make.
We're talking to Allie Rosen, host of the food show Potluck, author of cookbooks, including her latest called Modern Freezer Meals. It's Food Friday. We're talking about summer gatherings, hosting and attending, what to make, what to bring. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you already hosted or attended some kind of cookout or other, a picnic, outdoor potluck this year? How'd it go? What was a hit? What would you do differently next time? Do you have questions for our guest at 800-642-1234? And what does a cookout menu mean to you? Does it mean some brats, some buns, and some mustard, and you're done? Or does it mean lots of different stuff that lots of different people bring? What should be on the menu? What are your favorites to bring and share? Call in now at 800-642-1234. Nobody called in yet. Thought we were in Wisconsin. Thought people loved cookouts. Maybe not. Maybe not. 800-642-1234 to join our Food Friday conversation. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. And hey, find some recipes from Allie over at WPR.org/Food Friday. We'll continue the conversation. Maybe hear from you coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our Food Friday conversation about cookouts and other outdoor summer food gatherings with Allie Rosen, host of the food show Potluck, author of cookbooks including Modern Freezer Meals, simple recipes to cook now and freeze for later, and with you at 800-642-1234, your cookout favorites, your favorite potluck dishes, your questions for our guest. 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Kelia is with us in Milwaukee. Kelia, hi.
Hi. I am a single mom working two jobs, but I always feel like I need to bring something, so I bring the guac. And I'm wondering, how do we keep it looking fresh and appetizing versus yucky and brown?
I'm right there with you, Kelia, because like, it seems like a great, obvious thing to serve, and an hour or two into the thing, do you have any thoughts, Allie, on how to keep it looking good?
I do, and this is going to sound so weird, but stay with me. If you make your guac and it's sitting in a bowl, put a layer of water on top of it, like before you cover it with saran wrap. The air sort of can't penetrate through the water, so it's actually the thing that will keep it freshest. You can add like a little bit of lemon into that water if you want to like go the extra mile, because like the citric acid and the lemon will help. But yeah, it sounds so crazy. And then when you get to, you know, when you get wherever you're going, like just kind of dump off the water into the sink and give everything a stir. Yeah, you don't have to like leave it on there, but that will keep it fresh. It's one of those mind-boggling things where you're like, oh, like if I can do it this way, like I will never have gross, like sad brown guac again. It'll save you every time.
The key is to dump the water. I don't think anybody wants to dip their chips into that sloppy guac.
Exactly. Yeah, no one's going to want to stick their chip in like the layer of water. But yeah, no, it keeps it perfectly fresh.
Hope that helps, Kelia. Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. All right, let's get another recipe in here. And this one, your setup for this one makes me realize that you and I would probably be friends, Allie, in real life, because you got a hamburger, but it's ham, and you just fell in love with the joke when you came up with it, which is exactly the thing I do with my jokes. Tell us about the inspiration for the hamburger.
Yeah, I mean, I made an offhanded joke to my brother once of like, you know, why are hamburgers like not made with ham? Like that seems sort of counterintuitive. And then I was like, wait a minute, why don't we have burgers made with ham? So this burger has like, you know, bacon and pork, and it's like a whole porky, meaty deliciousness. And honestly, like, I don't know. I mean, I get that like ground beef is great, and I get that ground pork doesn't quite have as much flavor, but when you add in that bacon and, you know, some Worcestershire sauce and some other flavorings, it's like, it's the best version of a burger. I don't know why we're not all doing it. So yeah, if you want to show up to a cookout and like be the winner of the cookout, like make the ham burger. Like it's great.
Now you can find that ham burger recipe online, WPR.org/Food Friday, ham in all caps, because it's made with ham. You got it, right? 800-642-1234 is the number to call to join with your favorites or least favorites about outdoor food gatherings, the cookouts, the picnics, the potlucks, and more. 800-642-1234. Calls now. Beth Ann is with us in Bristol. Beth Ann, hi.
Hi, guys. I was going to talk about the social aspects of the potluck.
Good or bad?
Well, you guys were talking about the one-upping and all that. But, you know, like my sister-in-law used to bring a taffy apple salad. And I was going to a different cookout. And I was going to bring her taffy apple salad. And when she gave me the recipe, I thought she was lying. I thought she was sabotaging me. Because it calls for vinegar and pineapple juice to gel the night before. I honestly thought
that's one of those.
Wait, did it work? Did you try it? Did it work? Or was it?
I did. It was real. It was real.
Okay.
But I think that people do that. Like, if you're so popular for a recipe and then you can't make it and someone else wants to make it, they like give you a saboteur ingredient so that yours won't be as good as theirs.
I can't stand it.
Well,
I know they planned it. It's sabotage.
People.
Yeah, go ahead, Allie.
Yeah. I was going to say, there's two types of people. There's the people who you can't get them to shut up about their recipes, or there's the people who guard it like a nuclear secret. You know, it's like there's nothing that you can do to get that recipe out of them. And yeah, I think if you try, like my aunt always makes this pea salad, and I've asked her for the recipe a million times. She won't give it to me. So, I mean, you know, whereas, I mean, for me, it's like all I want is to be like, oh, try this thing. I just made it, you know, so. Yeah, you got to find the people who want to give out their recipes.
Well, I hope that's you, Allie. Since you write cookbooks, I hope you're not sabotaging all our meals.
No, I don't hoard recipes.
Beth Ann, thanks.
I give them freely.
Thanks for that call. I hope your family gets along well at the next potluck. We are talking about cookouts, dishes to bring and pass at potlucks, picnics, and more. Allie Rosen is with us. Her books include Bring It, Tried and True Recipes for Potlucks and Casual Entertaining. Find a few recipes she shared with us at WPR.org/Food Friday, or join the conversation with your favorites or your evidence of sabotage at past potlucks. 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. Okay. Here's one that kind of violates the hot and cold rule, but I love it. So you just got to make sure you got a freezer ready for you. You shared berry yogurt popsicles, just two ingredients in these guys.
Yes. I mean, this is like the thing I make with my kids all the time. And it's really just like we're in that season now where good berries are starting to come. You can get those delicious local berries, combine them with a good yogurt, have a little freezer, you know, a popsicle mold, and you will have dessert forever. And it's great for kids. I mean, I don't know about other people with kids, but like when mine get a hold of anything with sugar, my whole day becomes a very different affair. Mm-hmm. So these popsicles are great because there's no sugar, there's nothing added, but the kids feel like they're getting a treat and the adults feel like they're getting a treat too. So yeah, I love them. Everyone's like, oh, you can add in all these special ingredients. It's like, no, yogurt, berries, you're done. It's so good.
Again, find that a pretty straightforward recipe at WPR.org/Food Friday. Let's go back to your calls now. Nina is with us in Appleton. Nina, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I am calling to save everybody money who loves avocados.
Oh, good.
I want to let you know a hack that I learned. It is avocados are on sale. I buy a dozen of them. And you know how they all ripen at once? I put them in the middle of the table. They all ripen at once. But here's the way I save them. Did you know that avocados are freezable? And it does not harm the texture at all. So you can save a lot of money, and they're ripe and ready to go. All you have to do is unthaw them. They don't turn brown. And this is how I do it.
Where'd you learn that?
The Ziploc bags.
Oh, okay. Well, go ahead. Yeah, give us the instructions.
You get out the Ziploc bags. I use freezer bags. You know, they're thicker. So anyway, I'll take the quart size bag. I'll take 2 to 3 that avocados. I slice them, take out the pit, discard it, whatever. Then you can scoop it out and you put it in the bag. And then you smash all the air out you can. So it's a flat little sheet of avocado. You don't have to add anything to it. Get out all the air and then stack them up in the freezer and they freeze flat. They do not turn color, and nobody knows that they're frozen.
Wow.
Because FYI, people, most restaurants, they get frozen slices from their food distributor, like Sysco. I went to chef school, so I found that out. And I'm like, I'm going to do that at home.
Fantastic, Nina. Thanks for sharing. I'd never heard of that, Allie. Had you?
Yeah. And I would add to that if you put a little bit of lemon in there, it'll hold a lot better. Because again, that citric acid really helps preserve it. But yeah, I mean, you wouldn't want to use it if you're making something that you're really getting the texture of the avocado. Mm-hmm. But if you're, putting some avocado on top of a burger, if you're using it for guacamole, it freezes great. Yeah. I mean, listen, I'm very happy with anyone who is on board with the freezer train. Like I am an acolyte of freezing almost everything. So yeah, I mean, freezing avocados is great. Just don't freeze them whole without mashing them, because it does that the texture does not hold up to that.
Excellent. Thanks a lot for sharing that, Nina. Time for another caller. Dennis is with us in Green Bay. Dennis, hi.
Hi. I have a recipe for potato salad that I developed over the years. I call it potato salad for people who don't like potato salad.
What and puts it over the top for the potato salad haters?
Well, the thing that most people don't like is when they bite into a raw onion or a raw cucumber or a raw radish in their potato salad, and then they get overwhelmed with that flavor. So what I do is, instead of using those, I use dill pickle. And then the other thing I put in it is diced dill pickle. And then instead of putting mustard or something like that in, I use either Miracle Whip or mayo. And then I mix a quarter cup of pickle juice with that.
Oh, interesting. Dennis, thanks. We don't have too much time left. Allie, any potato salad tips you want to share, or get on board the pickle juice train with Dennis?
I mean, the pickle juice train is a train that I would love to ride on all day long. I mean, pickle juice adds so much, acidity and brightness to a lot of dishes. And I would say the other thing that works well to sort of dab in is like a little bit of Worcestershire sauce or a little bit of soy sauce, something to give a little umami there. Like, you won't necessarily know what it is, but yeah, you want to always pump up those potato salads, because there's nothing worse than kind of like a sad, bland potato salad. But yeah, pickle juice is a great idea.
Dennis, thanks for the call. And Allie, thanks for being with us today. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure.
That's Allie Rosen, host of the food show Potluck, author of several cookbooks, including her latest Modern Freezer Meals, with us on Food Friday to talk about cookouts, picnics, and other summertime gatherings. Find her recipes at WPR.org/Food Friday. Coming up Monday on The Morning Show, a look at Wisconsin marijuana. It's not legal here in any way. An expert compares and contrasts with other states. That's Monday morning on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up today at 6 on 1A+. On the Friday News Roundup this week, the latest from the ground in Ukraine. Also, why U.S. troops are headed back to Somalia and the return of secret schools for girls in Afghanistan. That's today at 6 on 1A+. Now, the U.S. women's national soccer team will be paid the same as their male counterparts. That's part of the new collective bargaining agreement both the men's and women's teams reached this week with the U.S. Soccer Federation, the sport's national governing body. This follows a $24 million settlement between the Soccer Foundation and the national women's team, which guaranteed equal pay as well as millions of dollars in back payments for players. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been following this pay gap story with soccer in particular in the United States? What do you think of this new deal? If you're an athlete or a parent of one, what does this decision mean to you? Do you see more visibility for women's sports in the U.S. in general? Do you want to see more of it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Stephen Goff has been covering soccer for the Washington Post for decades, including Major League Soccer and the U.S. women's and men's national teams. He's covered 5 Women's World Cups and every Men's World Cup since 1994. Stephen, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, how does this deal work? What had to happen to bring this equal pay deal to reality?
Yeah, it's been a long time coming. A lot of ups and downs for the for the women trying to gain equality on the pay front. And the big sticking point over the years was this, these World Cup bonuses. You know, the U.S. women would win a World Cup and get a few million dollars to split. Men's team, a men's team would, you know, maybe go to the round of 16 and get far more money for their performance. And the money came from FIFA, the World Soccer Governing Body, which provides much more prize money to the men than the women because of the revenue they say they generate. So they've come together and amazingly found a solution in which the two teams will pool their World Cup bonuses and split them down the middle. And, you know, nothing like this has happened in world soccer. It's a first, and, you know, the players are hoping this will lead to greater equality around the world.
Is the United States unique in the relative popularity of the women's national team? A very, very successful team that's actually brought a lot of viewers in, I think even relative to the men's team.
Yeah, they're rock stars. You know, they've done it through their success in World Cups and the Olympics. They've done it through the way they play, the personalities on and off the field. You know, you can name, you know, you could make the argument that the most popular soccer players, American soccer players in this country are the female players. And so, you know, there is a great a following here. And they have driven sports fans, the interest from sports fans over the last 25 years. Here we are now where they will collect more, you know, more money and be equal with the men.
This hasn't necessarily been kind of a happy kumbaya get together on this, though. Can you talk about some of the contentious years in a lot of ways of women calling for this in the sport that led up to this point?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's been very complicated because, you know, the men have had a very different collective bargaining agreement with the U.S. Soccer Federation than the women. The women were on salaries. The men were on, you know, just appearance fees and bonuses, et cetera. That salary will now go away, and they're both on bonuses and appearance fees, et cetera. So they've bridged that gap. Yeah, the women have, you know, have gone to court multiple times. They've taken the fight into the public spectrum. It's gotten quite ugly at times. And, you know, it's been a hard road. And here we are.
Talking to Stephen Goff from the Washington Post, looking at this new agreement in the national soccer program, giving equal pay to the women's and men's national teams, unique in sports around the U.S. and around the world for soccer. You can join in if you have thoughts, reactions. What does this mean to you? Maybe to the young athletes in your family. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Stephen, part of the mission of a soccer program in the United States is to sell soccer to Americans. It's grown a lot, obviously, in popularity, a lot of people playing it. How does this fit into maybe a wider goal of bringing soccer onto more TV screens, getting more people into stands for the national team and for local teams?
Right. I mean, the U.S. Soccer Federation is a nonprofit, and their mission is to grow the game and spread the game. You know, this isn't a private corporation that's strictly making decisions based on revenue. So it's, you know, the women pushed the idea, the belief that, you know, they should be treated the same way as the men, and things have improved rapidly. Now, how does this agreement affect the long term? You know, I think it's, you know, in the public eye, people are going to say, hey, you know what? The Federation has done the right thing. The men's program has begun to understand what the women have gone through. And, you know, they're now really one team, one organization. It's always been kind of a separate thing. The men's team, the women's team, the Federation overseeing all of it. You either picked one side or the other, and you know, it just feels like they've come together, and you know, and with a with a 6-year collective bargaining agreement. I think that will reflect well on soccer in this country, and by extension, will help grow the game.
What are you hearing from the players, especially on the women's team themselves, since this agreement came out?
Yeah, I think they're happy with it. I think they're looking forward to the next step, and they've spoken about that publicly, that they want to push FIFA, the world governing body, to follow suit, and for other countries to follow suit. You know, soccer federations around the world have been very slow to back their women's program and back their women's players. So the hope is that, you know, the U.S. sets the standard as it has on the field for women's soccer, and now is continuing that standard off the field in the financial arena.
We've been talking about money mostly so far. How about playing conditions, the kind of fields people play on, the kind of logistical support, the equipment they get? I remember sitting down with the family to watch a women's friendly game some years back. The field conditions are so bad, they canceled the game. We got to rewatch the World Cup victory over Japan, which was cool to see again, but yeah, you want to see the live game. Are those kind of conditions part of the story here?
Yeah, and things like the field playing on artificial turf, that was phased out several years ago. So that wasn't really part of this deal. They're not going to play on artificial turf, but the women haven't played on turf in many years. And you talk to federation people, they'll admit that was a huge mistake, that they would always put the men, or almost always put the men, on grass fields. The women often played on turf, treated like a second class program. No one wants to play on turf. Sometimes it's necessary, but it was affecting the health and welfare of players. And obviously that cancellation certainly was the low point. This collective bargaining agreement dictates that teams have equal backing for staffing, for charter flights, for hotels, for all the support systems that go into funding and backing a world-class program.
And briefly, as we wrap up, Stephen, you said the next step might be FIFA. Now, that's a very different organization. It wasn't that long ago, I think, that the head of FIFA said, maybe cute short skirts or something like that. That's what it's going to take to get attention to the women's game. I mean, is there any sense that that organization is going to loosen up on these things?
Yeah, I mean, things have gotten better with FIFA and how they treat the women's game. You start to see them pay a little more attention to the Women's World Cup. They understand, the market forces here, that people are watching. And if people are watching, they can charge more to sponsors. They understand, they're starting to understand the power of women's soccer in certain countries, but certainly it's growing around the world. FIFA could certainly take the lead and say, hey, you know what? The men's tournament does generate more revenue than the women, but for the good of the game, we're going to give equal prize money to the men and women and, advance the game that way as well. So it's a slow moving organization, but I think there's a little bit of momentum here.
Stephen, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Stephen Goff covers soccer for the Washington Post. After a quick break, we're going to continue talking about the story, this equal pay for men and women in U.S. soccer, and hear from a sports columnist. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been following this story? Are you a fan of soccer, of women's soccer in particular? Are you happy about this news? Women's sports in general, do you think this change might give them a boost at different levels? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. If you're raising, as I once did, girls who are playing soccer, what do you think this means for them? 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk about the new collective bargaining agreement between the U.S. women's and men's national soccer teams and the governing organization, the U.S. Soccer Federation. This week, they all reached a deal that would see the women compensated the same as the men. We just heard from a soccer reporter about some of the details. Now we'll hear from a sports columnist. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234. Nancy Armour is a columnist for USA Today Sports. Nancy, thanks for joining us today.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Well, you tackled this very question in a recent column. How big a deal is this agreement?
This is huge. You know, the money itself is significant and will make a big difference for the women, a lot of whom have, you know, they've not been able to make a living wage playing soccer professionally. But in terms of the message that it sends and the signal that it gives, it is monumental. It is, as Midge Purse said, it is not appropriate to pay women less than men for doing the same job. And no longer will U.S. soccer do that. And I think that sends a message to people in every industry, in every kind of workforce, that, you know, the days of shortchanging women can and should and will be over.
Do you see this, as someone who covers other sports too, do you see this as something that could spill over not just into soccer, but into other women's sports?
Well, I think it's hard to make apples to apples comparisons, mm-hmm. because, you know, U.S. soccer is as Stephen said, it's a federation, it's a nonprofit. You know, it's different than, say, the NBA and the WNBA, which are separate entities. However, I think what this does show is that there is interest in women's sports, that there is a market for it, and that if you pay for it, if you give a women's team the support, both financially and, you know, if you want to call it emotionally, you will get a return on it financially. And I think we are starting to see that in the marketplace already, and I think this is only going to encourage or accelerate that.
Yeah, can you talk about what you've seen in terms of rising sports fan interest in women's sports? I think I saw that the women's national team is at the most viewed soccer game in the United States. Do you see other data points like that?
Yeah, you know, the numbers for every women's sports have been rising dramatically. You know, the year of the pandemic, one thing that was very notable was that viewing of sports was actually down for most of men's sports. And yet the sports that showed an increase in viewership were the WNBA and the NWSL, the two women's professional leagues that were playing during the summer of 2020. You are seeing rising ratings on ESPN and ABC for the NCAA women's tournament. You are seeing rising ratings for the WNBA. The national championships for volleyball, softball, gymnastics all have recorded increases. So clearly, I like to say this, if you give women a platform, there's going to be interest. But for decades and far too long, there just hasn't been this platform for women. And now, fortunately, we are seeing that start to change.
Talking to Nancy Armour, columnist for USA Today Sports, looking at the new agreement in U.S. soccer, paying men and women in the sport equally on the national teams. You can join in with your reactions, your questions at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Laura is with us in Manitowoc. Laura, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to call and say that I think it's a terrible idea. I do not think that the women's soccer team and the men's soccer team should be paid equally.
Because?
Because the women's team has been running circles around the men. They've been blowing it out of the water. They should be paid a lot more.
Laura, I wondered if you were going that way.
Laura, thanks for the call. Nancy, what do you think? I mean, in recent years, it's hard to argue. Well, one team's been very successful on the world stage.
You know, and I think that there is something, I don't want to say there's necessarily something to that, but I think there have been a lot of people who've said that. You know, the men didn't even make the World Cup in 2018, whereas the women have won it the last two times. It's, you know, in 2015 and 2019. I also think that was probably a factor in the men getting on board with us, that, you know, you can say that, okay, the men are losing some of their prize money, but you can't lose what you don't have. So they, you know, the women's prize money that they got for 15 and 19 might not be huge, but it still is better than what the men got for 2018, which was nothing. So I think that has created a recognition from the men and from U.S. soccer that, listen, this is good for all of us, that, you know, supporting the women's team, encouraging people to invest in the women's team is only going to benefit both teams. The more money that the women bring in is the more money that the men get too. So there have been people who said, yeah, they should just pay the women more than the men. And just based on performance the last few years, it's hard to argue with that.
Let's go to Paul now in Northern Illinois. Paul, hi.
Hey, you know, you're one of my favorite shows.
Thanks.
So, I wanted to bring something new, but I can't. Go Chicago Sky, and I just wanted to say the same thing, that I think equal is not equal in this case, because if we think of from a good old American capitalistic perspective, you've got the team that's actually, and I don't want to do the give an inch, take a mile, but, you know, take all milestones where we can get them, but it seems to me we're on our way, but the women should be making far more than the men.
Paul.
And that was my point, too.
Gotcha, Paul. Paul agreeing with our first caller. But then, Nancy, also, Paul mentioned the Chicago Sky. You mentioned, yep, you know, the women professional players, the ones who are not necessarily going to be on the national team. Some of them are, some of them aren't. It is not a way to really support yourself playing in women's soccer. The WNBA, we see a lot of players ending up playing overseas in part because of that, including, sadly, Brittany Griner, stuck in Russia, yep, jailed in Russia now. Do you think this national agreement is going to send a message to the pro teams that Paul just mentioned there?
The conversation about the WNBA is tough because it's also, you know, part of that is that the women play overseas in order to just keep game fresh because the WNBA season is so short. But yeah, I think this shows the value, you know, that there is worth to women. And I think, like I mentioned, I think we're seeing it, you know, in the rising ratings, in the rising corporate interest, in the interest that, you know, people who are buying teams now, that the values of franchises are rising for in the women's leagues. One thing I will point out is because of the bonus structure, the way that things go, the women actually technically could make more money, because if you know, the guys, the furthest that they've gotten since 2002 is the round of 16. So that's what, four games at the World Cup. The women have gone to the final. So they are playing more games than the men do. So that is going to allow them to make more money theoretically. So just pointing that one out. I think that this is going to show leagues that they need to step up, that the days of getting by on the cheap or running teams and leagues on the cheap no longer flies. And if they don't get with the program, then they're going to have consequences.
Thanks for that call. We heard from Joel on the Ideas Network Facebook page, who writes, so long as a women's sport generates equal revenue as the men's version does, they should get equal pay. They do in the four major pro tennis tournaments, as women's tennis is very popular. But Joel goes on, the same can't be said for women's professional golf and professional basketball. In short, the market should dictate the compensation of professional athletes. What do you think? Go ahead, Nancy. Yeah.
I will ask Mark then, how much free support have the men's leagues gotten for 50 years? You can't have this conversation about revenue unless you acknowledge that men have been the default for the better part of a century. The women were not given the opportunity to use the branding and the logo of March Madness until this year. Do you really not think that if they had been able to use this for what, the last 40 years or however long it's been that the men have, that there wouldn't be more interest in that tournament, that it wouldn't be generating maybe the same amounts of money? Everything in sports has been set up to benefit men. And so you cannot have these conversations about revenue without acknowledging that women have been put behind the eight ball. I mean, it's expecting them to, you know, hit a home run or get to cross home plate from, you know, starting at bat, whereas the men are starting on third base. You know, it's not the same argument yet. But if you put the resources and the investment into women's sports, then we can have a discussion in 10, 15 years, 20 years, and see where we're at.
Nancy, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
That's Nancy Armour, columnist for USA Today Sports. We talked with her and heard from Washington Post soccer reporter Stephen Goff about the new collective bargaining deal this week that ensures the U.S. national women's soccer team will be paid the same as the men. Coming up Monday on Central Time, the U.S. is still struggling with addiction problems. Rural Wisconsin is no exception. Find out how clinics around the state are trying to help people deal with addiction and to prevent it in the first place. We'll invite you to share your own stories as well. That and more coming up Monday here on Central Time.